Hey everyone, I'm Mitch Goldich, and welcome back to another week of the MMQB Week in Review podcast. Yes, we made it. You never know for sure, but when you get to the second episode, then it's an actual thing, and we are here with our second Friday in a row of this. I'm joined once again by some people clockwise in windows in my screen in Zoom. It's Jenny Vrentis, Albert Breer, and Connor Orr. Hey everyone, how's it going?
Hi, Mitch.
What's up, Mitch?
Hello.
I know you are all startled to see my beard is 1 week longer than it was this time last week, and I appreciated all the compliments off air. So if you want to repeat them on air, you're welcome to. I'm just going to start the show fishing for compliments here.
I don't think that our listeners at home understand, you know, how much hotter you've gotten. And I'm just saying, like, you're a good-looking guy to begin with, but it's insane, you know, how some people blossom during a pandemic, and you're just one of those people, Mitch, I guess.
We'll have to send out a screenshot in accompaniment with the podcast.
It's like bachelor potential here. Like
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think I'm going to be on The Bachelor anytime soon, but I will let my wife know that you said my looks have gotten better. moving on, speaking of television, last week we started by going around and everyone just shared, especially since, you know, it's so weird, we don't see each other anymore like we used to, so we went around and just kind of talked about how we've been filling our time, and most of us, the answer is working, but we've also talked a little about just TV and movies and things that we watch, so should we go around again and everyone can share one thing that they watched this week to keep busy? Albert, you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. The little time I have had, and I've got like a bad habit. I think I may have said this last week. I've got a really bad habit of falling asleep watching TV. So I'm, it's like probably the thing my wife likes least about me is how she'll like look over at me at like 8:45, right after we eat dinner and the kids are in bed, and I'll be passed out 3 feet away. So I actually have been able to almost make it through a documentary on HBO. I think it's on HBO called The Scheme, which I would recommend to everybody. A lot of great reporting went into it, so I guess kind of like journalism nerd elements to it too, but really, really interesting, like kind of look at how the FBI really badly wanted to get these basketball coaches and how much effort went into it, and you know, kind of sheds more light into how messed up the college sports system is in our country and how much time is wasted on making sure these kids aren't paid. So yeah, I'd recommend that to anybody. Dan Wetzel, who's, you know, a friend of mine, a great columnist over at Yahoo, is pretty prominent in there, and yeah, I thought it was really, really kind of an interesting look at like how the FBI kind of crashed the NCAA party.
That's the story just within the last couple years, right?
Yeah, that's right. Like it involved like Rick Pitino, Bill Self was in it. Like there's a lot of big name college basketball coaches in there.
All right. Connor, how about you?
So I would say a two-pronged attack. I never watched Everybody Loves Raymond like when it was on TV, and then started watching like old reruns of it at night. And while the foundation of the show is certainly like those bad 90s like comedian like my wife's a bad cook jokes, I think that the like through the seasons you see kind of like the balance of power restored a little bit, like Deborah just starts like really coming into her own and Ray's mom. So I don't know, I've been watching a lot of Everybody Loves Raymond. I don't know why. And reading Wine Spectator. Did you read Wine Spectator?
It's interesting that you bring that up, Connor, because I actually introduced my kids to the Flintstones the other day, which I hadn't watched it since I was a kid, and they liked the theme song, so we put it on. I didn't realize like how like horrifically sexist that show is. It was unbelievable watching like how, and this was like, we watched this as kids. Like I think everybody here probably watched that show when they were a kid, right? Like how it was crazy. So then I go from that and I show them the Jetsons, and the Jetsons, like, boy, would people be disappointed by the 21st century. People in the 60s and 70s and 80s, boy, would they be disappointed with how far we've come in 2020. I think that there was this feeling that we'd be probably living all on different planets now and flying around. And yeah, so definitely going back to the old shows has been good. But it's been interesting to see how differently people saw things back then.
No doubt.
Yeah. That's always, sometimes things are just so cringeworthy, just seeing things that don't hold up for whatever reason. So, but yeah, I've not checked, I don't think I've seen an episode of the Flintstones in, I don't know, 20 plus years. So may have to go back and check that. I don't even know what platform it's on, but maybe I'll go find it. Jenny, the most avid TV and movie watcher in the group, as we all know, what's been keeping you busy?
Yeah, well, I just to add on to the previous note, I feel like I watch things today and I'm like, wow, this is maddeningly sexist. Or I feel like listening to Howard Stern's interview with Tom Brady on Wednesday, I was struggling with. So I feel that way a lot. So I'm right. As we all know, I am not an avid pop culture watcher. So I actually haven't really watched anything in the last week. But my sister has been rewatching Felicity, which was a favorite of ours in college and probably late high school for me. My sister is a little older. And she was texting me like, can you believe Felicity blew off her art history final to go make out with Ben? And she's super chill about it. And I'm like, all these memories are coming flooding back. And I think particularly now there's a great value to the rewatch because you've seen it already. So it doesn't require all of your brain power to comprehend the plot. You're not really on the edge of your seat because you know how things happen. So it's not a stressful watch, but and then it's also nostalgic, which brings you back to a different time, maybe a little bit of escapism. So I might have to delve into a rewatch, maybe Dawson's Creek, you know, a lot of other contenders.
Would you be able to watch Dawson's Creek again without, I know you and I watched The Affair simultaneously, and I don't know his name, but the guy in Dawson's Creek is also in The Affair, correct? He's like
Pacey,
the ranch hand.
That's correct. Is that right? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. It's the guy who is it the guy who was the father of the right? Like the guy
in
the
affair. Pacey is the husband of the woman who leaves.
The husband of the woman who like cheats.
Allison. Yeah.
Okay. Well, right. Okay, I feel like I feel like you may have sprinkled in a little bit of a spoiler there, but yes, you're correct, Albert. That's true. That is a good point, though. You know, it's hard to rewatch when you see characters. I mean, seeing McNulty from The Wire in The Affair was also kind of jarring. So yeah, there's like it's difficult to kind of replace characters, I think.
One of my favorite things about that, and we're already veering dangerously off course here, but is that if you watch The Wire and then you watch The Affair, you see like how less concerned he seems to be with hiding the fact that he's British. Like in The Wire, he's a full-blown American cop, and in The Affair, he is like a British guy really barely trying to pretend he's not British. Like half the time you can hear the accent and stuff like that. But
that's a great
I think most
point.
Of the cast in that show is British, actually.
The Affair, yeah. Like, I just feel like The Affair, like, it had so much potential. That first season was awesome, and it just, I don't know, it just went so far off the rails.
They abandoned the format, and yeah. I know that all the MMQB people are tuning in to hear our thoughts on this short-lived Showtime series, but...
Speaking of abandoning the format...
This is great, though. I can actually participate in a pop culture discussion. I'm feeling very seen right now, and you make a great point, Connor. They abandoned the plot, which really was what... Or the format, which really was what sucked me, and I didn't watch after the first two seasons.
Yeah, the idea that everybody sees things differently. That's the best part, you know? That was the whole point of the show. And then right. All of a sudden, it's just like this fever dream and Brandon Fraser is involved and like...
Brandon Fraser's appearance was like kind of the breaking point for me. That was when... when he showed up as like psycho.
Moment.
Yeah, when he showed up as like this psycho, like it was just like, I don't know. That might have been when I was out.
I think that's when I tapped.
I've seen neither of these shows. The Wire is a bad one. That's number one on my list of shows that I haven't seen that I know I need to. But it's just like a big project, and I need to find time. Once I get started, I know I'm going to be
Mitch,
hooked.
Mitch, watch season one of The Affair. Thing. Season one of The Affair is fantastic. Yeah.
Mitch, I would argue that there's no time like the present.
I know.
Maybe next week.
It's also funny because I don't totally, as you guys are all talking about these two shows simultaneously and characters, it's not clear to me which shows you're talking about. So now I'm like, is Brendan Fraser going to show up in The Wire as a psycho? Or are they talking about The Affair? Now I just have no idea what to expect. Yeah. All right. Well, we should move on to football. But I have to say quickly, I watched the Taylor Swift documentary on Netflix.
Oh.
Pretty good stuff. Definitely enjoyed it.
I watched that too.
Yeah. The first half, I wasn't super into it. I enjoyed the behind-the-scenes stuff of her growing up, but a lot of the interviews, it just felt a little bit staged, and, you know, she's talking about her career. But then I thought the second half of the doc, when she got into her trial, which I actually didn't know too much about while it was going on, and then talking about her decision to be more outspoken on political issues, and they showed some of the behind-the-scenes things with her during the midterm elections. I thought the second half of it definitely got a lot more interesting, and I definitely enjoyed watching it, and it was interesting to see, you know, Taylor Swift, everyone, we've seen her for years mm-hmm. and sort of watched her whole career, and I definitely learned a lot about her that I didn't know. So it was worth an hour and a half or whatever it was to watch that doc.
I didn't even know about the Kanye thing, which when I said to Emily, I'm like, this happened? Really? Like the 2009 thing, right? Like, she looked at me like I was the dumbest person on earth. Like, how did you miss that? Like, so.
Yeah, that was
it was all
thing.
New that, to me. That was what was that great I about thought, it. So yeah, much of it was new to me. Surprising. It was fantastic.
Hmm. Yeah, nice little doc. If anyone has an hour and a half and a Netflix password, check out, see how Taylor Swift's doing. I saw her in concert once the night before the Super Bowl in Houston. I don't know if any yeah. of you guys were
oh,
also
yes.
there.
Mm-hmm.
DirecTV, I think, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a great. I saw her and then Lady Gaga on the halftime show the very next day. So it made a lot of people jealous telling them about that week. Fun little week. All right. Should we talk about football? The original plan of this podcast was that we were all going to talk about things we've been writing. I don't know. It's turned into just kind of a catch-up session. But let's talk about some of our articles that are up. You can, of course, check out the MMQB online every day. We've got fun new stuff. You can find us on Twitter and see everything we're posting. I think we've got to talk about the most important story in football this week. And obviously that is, drum roll please, you don't need a drum roll, everyone knows, it's the Tampa Bay Bucks new uniforms. And Connor, you were the one who wrote about this. You had a strong take. I'm just going to tee you up. Tell us what your take was.
This was the chance to bring back the creamsicle uniforms. Like, this was it. I think everything that's going on in the world, in the country, was just teeing the Buccaneers up to bring back those ridiculous uniforms. And they blew it. They went back to the uniforms, basically the Gruden era. They modified the 96 to 2013 uniforms and just kind of changed a little bit of the color tone. And then they got the all pewter option as well. But like, oh man, there was this idea that when Tom Brady signed with the Buccaneers that this was going to be sort of a Miami Heat sort of destination thing where, you know, stars would want to come and see the games and stuff like that. And if that's true, you have to go full Tampa. Like, you really have to go completely full Tampa, creamsicle. I'm so upset that they didn't bring him back. I was surprised at how many Buccaneers fans disagreed with me. I don't know how many Buccaneers fans exist, but the ones that I did hear from were like, no, it's good only once in a while, which, come on. Like,
I mean, yeah. I will say this, though. Like, so first of all, I think the Bucs uniforms are like the bellwether for how bad, like how much uniforms have gone in the wrong direction, because people like love them now. And in the 90s, when they were really bad, like before Tony Dungy got there, like that was part of like, they were seen as like the worst uniforms in the league, right? And there's like part of me like that thinks like that they, like if you bring those back, like for those people, it's like a kick dog, right? Like it's like they're going to remember the 80s. They're going to remember the 90s. They're going to remember Bo Jackson not wanting to play for them. They're going to remember Vinny Testaverde and how that didn't work out. That's the problem, Connor, I think, is that there's for you and I, like visually it looked awesome. For them, it just brings them back to a really, really dark time.
Interesting. But you know, you've got the guy to exercise it, right? Like, and then you own the most powerful color combination in all of sports, which is like broken hollandaise orange and bleach white. Like, that is like who doesn't love that, you know?
So you're exercising Bucko Bruce then?
Yeah, you bring it all back. I don't know. And this goes to a larger point. The Falcons uniforms, new uniforms, were hideous. They were just awful.
Bad.
Jenny and I dissected them on the Weekside podcast this week.
Sure did.
You know, I there's this weird like generalization of the uniform genre where it feels like all the teams are trying to become versions of themselves in movies where they don't own their own rights. You know what I mean? Like
the Miami
you can't,
Sharks.
Yeah, you're like, you're not allowed to say Falcons, so it's like Miami or, you know, Atlanta.
Just ATL. Yeah. They look like they're trying too hard to be cool.
Yeah.
And you can't try to be cool.
And the gradient,
as many of us on this podcast know.
Yeah. The gradient was a trying too hard to be cool moment for sure.
It was bad.
Those were the worst. You know, the thing is, like, about like the whole presentation of it too, was you actually got like a visual of how bad the uniforms were, because they had the old good looking uniforms as the throwback sitting right there, right? So you had the gradient, you had the all black, you had the all white, and then sitting right there was Calvin Ridley in the uniform that actually looks good. So it was almost like they were saying to you, here's how bad it's gotten, side by side, right there for you. You didn't have to do any work to find it.
Over the last like three years, because you go back to when the Jets revealed theirs, it blows my mind that the Jets, the Falcons, the Buccaneers, the Rams have all ignored their uniforms of, like, either with the Jets, the 80s and 90s, which would have been an awesome throwback to that darker green, the Falcons in the 70s with the red, or even the 90s in the Jamal Anderson era. That would have been an awesome throwback. Like, why are we scrapping perfectly good stuff to come up with something that, I don't know, it just looks horrible.
The real test. So here's the real test comes next week, guys. You know who's unveiling their new uniforms on Tuesday?
Is Cleveland's next?
Yeah, the second redesign in what, like, 4 years?
Right, but I think but I think that this is going back to the old, like, now this will be the real test. Like, and that's the thing about, like, what the Falcons and the Jets and some of these other teams have done. There's like a warning there for you. Like, Cleveland had something that was perfectly, like, that was great, right, for all those years, and they went in and they screwed it up, and now 5 years later they got to do it again. So there's this cautionary tale sitting out there for the Falcons, for the Jets, and all these other teams, and yet they're blowing right through the stop sign. So it'll be really interesting to see if Cleveland actually corrects their uniforms and goes back to what they should have been wearing all along.
I mean, I went to Penn State, so I'm used to uniforms never changing.
It's funny that you said that. My high school uniform was modeled after Penn State for years, and so we just had the Penn State uniforms. And then 5 years after I graduated, the coach wanted to shake things up, and he made it a blue helmet with a white stripe, and all hell broke loose. Like, like, people were just like, are you serious? You can't be possibly considering this. And so, I don't know. It's tough. Uniforms are a touchy thing. If I were the Browns, though, you know what I would do? I'd go full Michigan Wolverine. Like, I would do the Wolverine thing, you know, on the helmet, maybe.
The wings?
Like the, whatever that is on the front. The wings. What do they call that?
The winged helmet.
They call it winged helmet? Yeah, I would do that. Or do, like, an Alabama and do, like, brown numbers on the orange helmet or something like that, you know?
The Rams could still be okay, though. We haven't seen their uniforms yet. The logo isn't great, but the Rams could still go back to the blue and yellow uniforms.
True.
As long as no one does the Buckeye stickers on the helmets, at least it won't be that bad.
Yeah, that's just so excessive.
See, I think that that's just a piece of Americana right there that you guys are taking shots at.
Just a design flaw, really.
Well, here's, I just want to say one thing to counterpoint Connor on the Bucks and the creamsicle. I agree it would be cool. The only downside is the rule that you can't redo your jerseys too many years in a row, or in too many times in too short a time period. Because I'm with it. It would be very cool if they were just like, we got Tom Brady, we're doing it, let's have fun, this year is going to be insane, let's just have this ridiculous season and go all in. The trouble is that then you're committed to creamsicle for a few years, and if Brady gets hurt or he's old and he falls off the cliff, like, you know, eventually he's going to do at some point, then you're left with these uniforms and it's like, oh my God, we brought these back because we thought we were going to have this ridiculous Tom Brady season and we were going to be the most fun story in the NFL. And now he's hurt or he's bad and we've got these creamsicle jerseys for 4 more years. I think if you could do jerseys on a year-to-year basis, then it's a lot easier to just say, yeah, screw it, let's do the creamsicles.
It'd be more
Brady.
Proof that the creamsicles are actually cursed then, right?
That's also true, yeah.
Why don't you just let them do uniforms every year? The whole point of this is to gouge people into buying this crap anyway, right? So just let them change their uniforms all the time, you know? Or let them be like Oregon and have 52 different options, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on. Albert, last week we talked to you and you wrote about Dan Quinn mm-hmm. and the Falcons, and we talked all about the value of continuity and what a crazy offseason this is and how it'll be helpful to have guys who've been in place in their positions before. And then this week you gave us the total opposite of that look, because you talked to Matt Rhule, a rookie head coach in Carolina, about how he's adjusting, and he actually felt like he had some advantages based on his experience. So can you give us the flip side of this conversation from last week and tell us what you wrote about Carolina?
Yeah, sure. You know, and I think, you know, Matt Rhule was sort of in this, you know, coming into this. I think his experience has been with difficult situations. You know, he was at Temple, and Temple's traditionally been a really hard place to win. And then he, you know, took that job, you know, wound up playing for a conference title there, then went to Baylor, which I like the situation he walked into there was impossible. And, you know, for a lot of different reasons. And so being able to kind of, you know, work through everything that he worked through, like issues that went way beyond football, and, you know, make that place right, I think, you know, gave him good experience for saying, okay, like, if we can't go into the office for 3 or 4 months, that's okay. I actually think what was interesting about it too was he had real perspective, which I don't think you always get from football coaches, where, and maybe that's from the Baylor experience, but, you know, he said there are much bigger issues in this country that we have to deal with. So we'll handle it. We'll figure it out. It'll be fine. You know, we'll do our best to do what we can to make this work. And so, yeah, you know, he mentioned how he's been like kind of like leaning on his IT guys, and he's been trying to use this to build stronger relationships with people in the building. And you know, and then he thinks there are certain things that he can use to his advantage because of the, you know, practice restrictions and, you know, having to juggle guys, you know, academic schedules with their athletic schedules. There's been, you know, forever, you know, at the college level, kind of this limit on time that they have with each of the players. And so there's that part of it too. So I thought it was sort of interesting how, you know, he's trying to be as flexible as he can in handling everything that's, you know, put in front of him now. And because he's had experience in adverse situations in the past, you know, he feels like he's personally able, equipped to deal with it. And he's trying to build a program that's sort of the same, that's able to kind of withstand whatever comes its way.
It's interesting, Albert, two perspectives kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum and in terms of experience level, and they both think that they'll be use that to mm-hmm. their advantage. Connor and I were talking a little bit the other day, who might be in the worst situation right now, like considering like a new coach or some kind of turnover. I was thinking the Giants are in a really tough spot because Joe Judge is a first-time head coach at any level, and they're also, you know, Eli retired, and they're starting over with Daniel Jones, and they've had so much turnover at the head coach position, and there's more pressure. Whereas, you know, like you could say, Rhule has a 7-year contract, so he's a little bit more time to mm-hmm. figure it out. So I do think there are probably some situations that you look at and you're like, wow, that's going to be a tougher hurdle for them to clear.
I'd agree with that. Like, I think, like, you know, Ron Rivera, Mike McCarthy, and Matt Rhule of the five head coaches all have prior experience. I think that's probably really helpful, you know, because, you know, for Kevin Stefanski and Joe Judge, one in Cleveland, the other in New York, both those guys are going in. And, you know, I'm sure over, you know, the course of your career, you know, they bring in these huge books into their interviews, right? Like, which this is my plan, and this is how I've kind of built it up over the years through all my different experiences. And so, you know, like you've kind of been building your whole life to this, and now you get your shot to be a head coach. And, you know, the idea is probably to go as closely to your plan, at least at first, as you possibly can. And you haven't had to adjust in the past. And so I'm with you, Jenny. I think, like, with, you know, somebody like Joe Judge or Kevin Stefanski, it's probably kind of like going paint, like more so than the others, paint by numbers. Like, this is the way I always saw doing it if I got my shot. Now immediately you have to adjust without having any experience doing it at all. I think it's probably pretty tough.
Well, to Jenny's point, I think every head coach, they're all competitive. They have to be a little bit arrogant to get where they've gotten. I would bet if you polled all 32 head coaches and said, do you think that you're in a unique position to have an advantage in this situation? I would bet all 32 of them would say yes and just take whatever cards they've been dealt and spin it into a positive of why it's going to help
31
them.
31 of them would say yes, and then Belichick would just laugh at everybody else.
Yeah, and meanwhile, he is probably the one who's off in his secret lair and figuring things out. And, you know, he has to be the guy that you would trust the most. But then, you know, he lost Tom Brady. All right. Well, this was fun. Again, our second Week in Review podcast. Gary Gramling says hi, by the way. He joined us last week, and I'm sure he'll mix in and get in some more of these as we move forward. But he's off doing something else today. So thanks, everyone. Jenny, Albert, Connor, for doing this. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Make sure you subscribe to the MMQB NFL podcast. We've got shows 5 days a week. Plenty of good stuff, including this one, which is, I think, a fun new addition that we're all enjoying. And thanks to our producer, Shelby, because I know it's fun for us to turn on the mics and talk, but for him to mix in four people and put all the audio together, we appreciate all of his work. So thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to you again soon.